April 15th, 2024. This one is called Death Metal. Greetings, everyone. Beautiful day here where I am in New York. I'm out for a hike, taking in the sun, taking in all the fecundity, the greenness, lovely stuff. So for today, we're going to talk about heavy metals in food. And we're not going to talk too much about other ways to get heavy metals into the body, which we probably already know, dental work, vaccinations, you know, the wrong cookware, piping in the house, swimming, just breathing, you know, pharmaceutical medications, even the wrong supplements, which could be, you know, essentially 90% of the supplements out there. But for today, we're going to talk about food and what foods are particularly high in heavy metals. And there's a lot of them that are touted as, quote, healthy. We cannot be surprised there. And even foods that may have been historically a better bet for us now because of so much pollution in the world, we may want to reconsider. And when we're talking about heavy metals, we're talking about a lot of things. We're talking about mercury, lead, cadmium, copper, arsenic. There's so many. Oh, and something else, too, that's not on the list of food that is also high in heavy metals are vape cartridges, which have gotten very popular in the last decade or so. People think it's healthier than actually combusting marijuana or tobacco, but I beg to differ. I think it's way better if you're going to take those things to do it the old-fashioned way than to use these vape cartridges. Plus, it's not as easy to control the amount that you're getting into your system by doing that. So yeah, sometimes, you know, with touted as being better or healthier as an alternative is actually not so good for us. We can't be surprised. There's a lot of snares in this world. So let's go through a list of things, foods that are high in heavy metals. And I called this show death metal because, of course, that's a genre of music. But also, if you take in too many heavy metals, it may not kill you in the sense that you'll die, but in a way, it kind of cuts down our spirituality. So I want to focus a little bit on that today, talking about how different foods that are heavily contaminated in an esoteric perspective and also applicable to the exoteric because they also may affect one's cognition and the whole thing about brain fog, etc., thinking clearly, that of course is tied to having, you know, enough spiritual clarity. So we're talking about kind of the death, if you will, of one's spirituality or one's mental faculties as well when we're talking about heavy metals. So number one on the list, very sad, this would be number one, but it's baby food, which is terrible. But we cannot be surprised that, of course, this would be tainted. And what better way to cut someone down early in life than to contaminate baby food? Now, of course, the best baby food is made at home. It's very easy to make baby food. There are lots of blogs. There are lots of recipe books out there to make baby food. It doesn't really take a lot of work. Oftentimes you can take whatever you've made for the rest of the family and just puree it for a baby, if you're doing purees, and everyone does pureed food. But yeah, unfortunately, baby food is really high in heavy metals. It has 91 times the arsenic level that's recommended, 177 times the lead level, 69 times the cadmium level, and 5 times the mercury level. So this is horrible. And of course, this could even possibly be in organic baby food, because organic is really not a guarantee of being chemical-free or heavy metal-free, because they are allowed legally under the USDA organic label to use like 200 things, chemicals, etc., whilst they're engaging in organic farming. So oftentimes what's better than organic farming is buying chemical-free directly from a farm that may not have the funds to go through the USDA organic labeling, or to, of course, grow your own, maybe barter with a friend. But yeah, really, really sad and really messed up that baby food would be high in heavy metals. And of course, many of us know that baby formula is also high in heavy metals, super toxic. They add heavy metals to it as well. So something to be definitely aware of. Number two is fruit juice. Things like apple juice are possibly really high in heavy metals. Of course, most of the time juices are marketed to the younger people, to babies, children, teens, etc. It says that here that you can get arsenic from juice. That's one of the most possible things to get with juice. And of course, juice is a concentrated food. I'm not too keen on juice, specifically fruit juice. I think things like vegetable juice, things like maybe celery juice or, you know, mixed with lemon, maybe a little bit of organic green apple can be quite cleansing. But in general, fruit juice is a concentrated food. There's no fiber. It's technically a processed food. Majority of the juice out there is going to be cooked anyway. It's not going to be raw. There was a company about 15 years ago called Ottawala that was one of the only raw juice companies out there, but they were maliciously put out of business by Pepsi. Pepsi, I think, bought them for like a really small amount of money after this company supposedly had like an E. coli scare, which could have been manufactured in the first place. So rethink juice. The best fluid to be drinking is pure filtered water. And of course you want to filter your water because water can also be another way we get heavy metals into our bodies. You want to be conscious that our drinking water, our cooking water, the water we use to bathe and clean our bodies, as well as wash our clothing, is filtered. Number three on the list, kind of a bummer, rice. And yes, a lot of the world does eat rice, but rice can be really high in arsenic and lead, especially brown rice, because it has more of the bran on the outside. When white rice is polished, it has a bit less, and it really depends on where it's grown. The rice that is grown in Thailand, jasmine white rice, that is lowest in heavy metals or arsenic as far as I know. And it accumulates in the outer layer of it. So like I said, brown rice would have more than white rice. And like we talked about last time, there's plenty of other grains out there that don't really get like buzz. Barley, yes, barley has gluten in it, but it was never given the hybridization treatment that wheat was given, nor was rye. Rye's a bit intense for a lot of people, but barley is really rad. Sometimes if you react poorly to wheat, you actually might do okay with barley. Barley is also a really good source of fiber. Also fonio, I mentioned on the last show, fonio is a grain from Senegal. Farro is another grain. It's an Italian wheat. It's less hybridized, albeit it's still wheat. So there are grains out there that could be alternatives. And the thing now is like rice is used as a filler in a lot of products because it is quite affordable. And now because of this gluten-free boom, which I guess has been going on for, well, at least two decades, majority or many of the gluten-free products on the market have rice flour, rice starch. Yes, there's sometimes there's corn in there or a tapioca. Sometimes there's nuts in there. But if you're having problems digesting gluten, you are far better off for your weight, your health, physical and mental, everything, to just avoid these foods as opposed to trying some facsimile, because these gluten-free foods are, like I said, could be loaded with heavy metals. They can cause all types of like glucose spikes in the body because they're just like pure starch. And if they're being made with nuts, then they're going to be extremely high in copper. Arsenic is in a huge proportion of the global rice supply, which is quite a bummer. So what you want to do is you want to rinse the rice before you eat it. Some people actually also do something where they soak it with a bit of activated charcoal. That's another option for you as well. And you'll see the water washes off. It's quite starchy. And a lot of cultures where rice is like the king or the mother grain, they naturally will soak it and take off the starch water because it's way tastier and I think it's more digestible. But think about maybe using other grains throughout the week. Like if you're still really like hip to rice. Like for someone like me, I grew up on rice. I grew up on brown rice, which I don't eat a lot of anymore. I'm more geared towards the white rice these days. But like I said, you may want to think about adding in some other things. The next on the list is dark chocolate. The darker the chocolate, the higher the heavy metals. So yeah, 70% cacao. They always tout the benefits, improve heart health, cognitive function, blood pressure. Well, there are a lot of foods that do that do not have heavy metals, right? And there was a report that came out, I think I posted this on one of the channels, in 2022, there were dozens of popular dark chocolate products with super high levels of cadmium and lead, including Trader Joe's, Hershey's, even some of the more like fancy boutique kind of like health brands. Like there's one called Hu, which is a paleo brand. They were one of the highest. They also identified a few, quote, safer dark chocolate bars at relatively lower levels of toxic metals. And people sometimes talk about chocolate being high in heavy metals just as like a brush statement talking about lead and cadmium. But no one really talks about the fact that cacao is intrinsically high in copper. And oftentimes people who have copper imbalance, copper toxicity, too much copper in ratio to zinc, will crave chocolate. I think oftentimes the mechanism behind women craving chocolate before their period starts, some people think, oh, it's magnesium. Yes, it could be magnesium. And if that's the case, take some extra magnesium, get a foot bath going, take a regular, you know, bath with Epsom salts or magnesium chloride, even better than Epsom salts. Eat some more magnesium-rich foods. But I think oftentimes women who have hormonal imbalances will crave the chocolate, because when the progesterone is supposed to be rising in the second half of the luteal phase, it's actually not, and the estrogen is higher, and they crave that copper from the chocolate to get that buzz. Because remember, copper is an excitotoxin. It creates like a buzz. And then over time, that buzz, the whipping of the adrenals, eventually that can't go on much longer. And then you become fatigued, lethargic, and tired. So yeah, something to be considering right there in regards to chocolate. Lead can be found in the outer shell of the cacao pod. And as they are harvested, the beans themselves accumulate lead from dust and dirt in the process. So a lot of these things we've been told are health foods. We really have to think about, are these really health foods? What is a health food? What's a health food for me? All questions to ask ourselves. Up next on the list, shouldn't be surprising, this is a processed food, and that would be protein powders. When it's difficult to get enough of this building block in your food, especially for non-meat eaters, protein powders will come to the rescue. But not all protein powders are created equal, and some come with the added risk of toxic metal exposure. So commercial protein supplements, both those that were whey and plant-based, found concerning levels of lead, according to a 2018 study. The study showed that some of the plant-based protein powders had twice the amount of lead, along with the levels of arsenic, cadmium, and mercury. And I will add here that 86% of the collagen powders on the market have actually tested high for heavy metals, and gelatin itself is actually high in copper. So really, I do not recommend a single protein powder out there. I think they all are problematic. I think they all have an issue. I think the best thing to do is really just to get your protein from food, just like getting your carbohydrates, fats, and fibers from food. I think that's really what it's about. I mean, think of our ancestors. Even think about, you know, your grandparents maybe, or your great-grandparents. Were they doing protein powders? Were they doing tons of supplements? The answer is probably no. So I don't think that these protein powders are a good idea. They're also really expensive too. Like, I'd rather spend my money on food personally. I mean, you can get a pretty good quality pound of, like, let's say like a lean ground beef for about $10. You can even get like a lean venison for about $10. I'd rather spend my money on that personally than just some protein powder. And most of them taste pretty gross anyway. Up next is leafy greens. Yes, this one may surprise you, but leafy greens, they have vitamins and nutrients, of course, but the hidden downside of this fiber-rich food could be the soil that they're grown in. Now, I know via organic farming, copper sulfate is used. It is sprayed on crops during organic farming, I believe, because copper is considered to be antimicrobial. That's why now if you go to places like TJ Maxx or Marshall's, you may see that they're touting these pillows as being antimicrobial, antibacterial, etc., and they have copper in them. So this is something that is annoying to find out, of course, and it says that the heavy metals are in things like spinach and lettuce. Well, no one should be eating spinach, at least on a regular basis. I don't know why anyone would want to eat it. High in A, high in copper, high in oxalic acid. Tastes pretty terrible unless you drown it out with like tons of cheese and butter. That's just me. Now, the brassica or the cruciferous vegetables, kale, cabbage, and Brussels sprouts, those are not good accumulating contamination in the water and the soil, but they accumulate it in the leaves. So these cruciferous vegetables are called hyperaccumulators. So they concentrate the components in the plant in a bioremediation process, taking up the heavy metals from the soil to decrease its levels. So there's something else about those, the leafy vegetables. Now, not to say you should never eat these foods, but just try to find places, you know, sources rather, where you can get these things where they haven't been completely and totally contaminated. It says here that spinach that was sold in 2021 via retailers like Safeway, Trader Joe's, and Target had dangerous levels of cadmium in spinach. So here we have spinach. We've got oxalic acid, vitamin A, copper, lead, or cadmium rather, not lead. I don't know why anyone would want to eat it. So basically, I think like the softer, the more leafy something is, the more likely it is to accumulate, which is unfortunate. Of course, we don't want to, I don't think, necessarily give up all. Someone might say, oh, this is a great idea. I'm just going to give up all vegetables and just eat muscle meat. That doesn't work all the time long term because you really need to have a source of fiber to be getting out the toxins. Otherwise, you're in that constant cycle of enterohepatic recirculation where you keep on recirculating all your bile and all your toxins, which is a bad situation to be in. Up next are root vegetables. Things like sweet potatoes and carrots are susceptible to soil contamination. Root vegetation is considered at high risk for contaminating heavy metals. Buying all natural or organic doesn't make much of a difference, unfortunately, since the methods for organic farming also use soil and water. And of course, like we know, it uses copper sulfate. It says here the amount of toxic metals can be vastly inconsistent. One report found that one sweet potato contained 10 times more than a store-bought sweet potato puree. So it can be difficult to determine what factors affect the discrepancy. Again, I would not be eating sweet potatoes, especially the orange ones. If you really craved one, I would suggest eating the lighter colored ones and not on a regular basis. As we know, sweet potatoes are high in oxalic acid, vitamin A, copper, and now we're hearing here that they're high in other heavy metals. So something to consider there. And oftentimes we're told to eat like a rotation of like these 10 vegetables and these 10 fruits, just like we're told to eat like, you know, certain types of grain or certain types of, you know, meats. Branch out. There are so many types of vegetables out there, especially there are so many types of vegetables that maybe more, you know, Asian or other parts of the world. Try some of those, you know, try different things. Don't just stick to the regular things out there. Something else is spices. I've known this for a while. Spices can definitely have all types of heavy metals. One third of the spices tested from large retailers saw that they are high in arsenic, lead, and cadmium, and this is especially true of the non-organic spices. I've said this before on shows. I'm not a big like person when it comes to like using a lot of spice. I think historically spices were used to basically let meat be passing for decent when it was like on the brink of basically becoming high and becoming, basically foul or spoiled meat. So they have their, ancestral or contextual or historical reasoning behind that, but I don't think using a lot of spices is really healthy. I think when people's taste buds are off, and when they have, like, let's say, a lot of like heaviness in their body from holding on to, old waste, whether that be like emotional waste or physical waste, when their organ health is poor, I think oftentimes we crave this like very intense tasting food. And now the trend with recipes, I pretty much stopped buying cooking magazines and new cookbooks because the trend is always some culinary abomination when it comes to like the spices. And of course, it's all about promoting anybody but a white person. We've seen this going on for a long time. I covered that thing that the James Beard Award was canceled, I think, one year because there were no black contestants. So the last time I thumbed through a copy of Bon Appetit, they were promoting queerness, BLM, Oye de Ay. No, thank you. I'll stick to reading the stuff from when things were normal. So yeah, the spices are something to think about. And if you are going to use spices, just be like really conscious of getting really good ones. And also think about how you maybe don't need them and they're a crutch. And if you really were cleaner and living more of a detoxification lifestyle, that you may just enjoy the taste of food with very, very simple seasonings. In some diets, like for example, in the TCM modality, a healing diet in traditional Chinese medicine utilizes what's called bland foods, where there isn't a lot of spices and seasoning, and this is actually very healing for the organs. And that's one of the things I like about the carnivorous approach, as well as TCM and macrobiotics, is that it's very clean seasonings, very minimal, if any, seasonings. Up next on the list is fish. Despite its health advantages, most consumers are aware that fish can't be eaten daily. And yeah, I don't think it should be eaten daily by anybody. Maybe if you live in some tropical area where like the fish is like completely pristine, but I don't think the majority of us listening here are falling into that category. I certainly am not. I live on an island, I have island heritage, but I still don't think that eating fish every day is a good move. Because of pollution, a mercury compound called methyl mercury accumulates in seafood sources in potentially dangerous amounts. Mercury contamination passes through the fish food chain, originating in their sources like algae, which readily absorbs in the toxins in the water. Remember, I'm thinking about this when I was a child. I remember going over someone's house and they had like a fish tank, and they had this thing in the fish tank, this funny looking fish, it was really weird looking, called an algae eater. So that fish just ate all the contaminated algae. So that fish was probably really, really high in heavy metals. That's oftentimes why they say the bigger fish have more mercury, tilefish, mackerel, tuna, swordfish. I know that Rastafarians who follow a specific biblical diet only eat fillet fish, so the kosher fish should have scales and fins that are 12 inches or smaller in size, because they believe that the bigger fish accumulate more toxins, and they are completely correct in that. It's not uncommon for people to have high blood mercury levels. One study showed that out of 89 humans in the US, 89% had excessive mercury in their blood. The side effects of eating too much mercury include neurological impairment like hearing, vision, and coordination challenges, as well as muscle weakness. And something else, copper. We've talked about this before. Shellfish, especially, are high in copper. I think oysters are number one. They were very much promoted through a lot of these modalities like the root cause protocol, pro-metabolic, repeat diets, all this, etc. The pro-metabolic approach seems to kind of be a conglomerate of a lot of repeat's principles mixed with the root cause protocol, making it really, really dastardly in regards to it being high in fat, high in vitamin A, high in copper. This is just an absolute total don't. One of the worst regimes, I think, out there. So if you do want to eat fish, you probably want to stick to smaller fish if you are going to eat it, but I certainly wouldn't make it a staple protein. I would focus more on things like pastured chicken, pastured turkey, what else? Duck. Duck can be a little high in copper, so I kind of like go away from that. Maybe once in a while duck. Not everyone really eats duck on a regular basis. Most people don't, unless they're like really into like, you know, gourmet cookery or something like that. Lamb I kind of shy away from because it's really, really, really high in fat, or at least it feels that way to me. And it's also high in copper. Venison is good. Elk is good, of course. Pork, not really too keen on that. And of course, you know, beef and stuff like that. I would really use those as your staple proteins because fish is not really what it used to be. It's one of the things that's really unfortunate, especially for me who grew up on rice and fish and seaweed. Like that was, you know, very much, I grew up on an Asian style diet. Didn't eat fish every single day because we were mostly more vegetarian, if anything. Fish maybe once a week or so. But there was a point in my 20s or so when I technically was pescatarian and I was not eating dairy. I was a dairy-free pescatarian, so I was just eating eggs and fish. And, you know, of course, you may be able to get away with more of this when you're younger, but all of these things accumulate. Heavy metals accumulate in the body. When you get older, you're probably going to have a higher load of them, typically, right? Vitamin A accumulates in the body. So all of these things, as we go on in life, typically we have more stressors, we pick up more bad habits along the way, typically. We typically gain more weight along the way. So as all of this happens, our bodies hold on to this. And the more body fat we have, the more times typically we're holding on to the heavy metals. But in a way, it's somewhat of a blessing because at least we have somewhere for them to go. If someone's like really lean and they don't have like any fat tissue to hold the heavy metals, it's probably going to attack the bone and cause like dental issues and bone issues. And finally on the list, bone broth. The flavorful soup base is thought to have ample benefits, providing minerals and collagen, protein to help with nutrition, gastrointestinal function, and weight maintenance. Unfortunately, adding a cup of bone broth to your routine is not without risks. As the bones get simmered down to release all the good things, you also may be infusing the stock with dangerous metal toxins. And yes, this is why I've said before on many shows, I'll reiterate it here, do not simmer your broth for more than, let's say, 2 to 3 hours. Definitely use more of the joint bones, which have more collagenous or cartilaginous tissues, so it'll make more collagen and gelatin, more of a substantially nutritious broth. The long bones, like marrow, tend to be very high in heavy metals, and if it's going to be simmered continuous, which was a big thing that was kind of promoted through the Weston A. Price Foundation, continuous bone broth, simmering it for 18, 24 hours, then you strain that out, then you add more bones in there, then you're simmering like some bone for like, I don't know, a week or two at a time. This is so bad. Concerning amounts of lead can be sequestered from the bones of farm animals, which leaches out into the broth. A study from 2013 found that even in organic sources, lead could be seen at noticeably high levels in bone broth compared to the tap water with which it was cooked. So yes, bone broth can be helpful for a lot of things, but I would highly recommend this is something that you like, that you pretty much make your own, because you really can't be guaranteed with the ones in the store. Most of the time on the label, they're going to tout something like, oh, we simmered this like all day. And also something too, they usually add stuff. Like to me, I take a very strict, simple carnivore approach when I'm making broth. I just put the bones in there and the water. I don't do bay leaf. I don't do onion, carrot, celery, garlic, ginger. Well, there's one medicinal broth that I do make that's a Chinese broth with a black silky chicken where I do use some herbals, but that is a different recipe that's not made too often. But my regular broth is simmered for 2 hours using the Chinese technique of boiling it, draining off the fat, adding fresh water, and I don't cook it for more than 2 hours, and I only use water. I don't use salt. So if you are going to drink some broth, I would really recommend that you make it yourself. And once you get into the idea, or the routine rather, of making it, it's not really that hard. So let's recap what we've gone over today in regards to death metals: baby food, fruit juice, rice, dark chocolate, protein powders, leafy greens, root vegetables, spices, fish, and finally, bone broth. So yeah, a lot of food for thought. I'm not trying to scare anyone or create disordered eating patterns. This is just about us having awareness and maybe rethinking what we were told is healthy. So I'm going to go on my walk right now. I hope that was easy listening, entertaining, informative, all of those good things. And I have a lot of groovy shows coming for the spring. Lots of things. A show on weight loss for women, a show on sacred unions, marriage and relationship, the yoga of that, as well as a show on the suffering psyops, which you are not going to want to miss. And of course, if you need more support in the milieu of nutrition, emotions, sexuality, philosophy, spirituality, etc., do not hesitate to contact me if you'd like to work one-on-one. So that's all for today. I bid you farewell, and we'll be connecting on the next tidbit. Sat Nam.